Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and this Aspire broadcast is being offered to you here on June the 12th, 2021, and we're going to talk about change. What does it mean to change? What are we talking about when we're talking about making a change or being in the thrust of change? I think a lot of us have a great deal of difficulty with the idea of change. Some people look forward to it because they're bored or they're not getting what they want or they think they will get what they want. There's always that carrot dangling. But life is a living thing. And I don't think many of us really understand that it's a living thing and it is meant to change because it's based in impermanence. That's the big one, impermanence. And we just don't understand impermanence, where everything changes, everything's in a flux, and yet the seasons, they are always moving in a cycle. And a lot of the changes that we see are also in a great big cycle. History does repeat itself over and over and over again. Not like the seasons do quickly in every year, but they do continue to change. So what is it about change that is so annoying? Well, I have some wonderful questions about this annoyance of change. And people are looking for how to change, if they can change. Can they move with the changes in the world? There are a lot of social changes going on right now. I look at it like a bull in the china shop. I think we make a lot of changes that aren't really changes. You can't rearrange humanity and think that you've changed it. And that's about all we've done. The premise of most of our living is based in hate and fear. You can't change anything for authentic change, in my opinion, which means that something elevates or something actually moves in a different direction, altering everything in its path, an energy, a situation, a condition. We've all had changes in our lives that have altered the way we go about our daily living. Life is a thrust of change, and it has nothing to do with time. It has to do, basically, in our biology, it has to do with chemicals and how our body is changing, hormones and brain chemicals and genes moving around, changing, morphing, turning from maybe the potential of great health to the potential of great sickness. There's all sorts of change occurring within us and around us, and for the most part, we don't really appreciate all of that, but it's all based in impermanence. And I hope that in this broadcast, I have three wonderful questions about change. And maybe these questions will help you and the kind listeners that send in these questions. If you ever want your question considered, please email me at greg@aspire.org. That's greg@aspire, A-S-P-I-R-E .org, O-R-G. First question comes from Brad. He does not tell me where he lives. The world has changed, and then he goes into a number of things. He's 56 years old. What does these changes mean to the world and myself? And then the changes that he initiated here were in politics and basically environment, so you know. Brad, you got to understand something. Human beings never change. Their method for creating mischief often changes. That is true. But the basis of everything in this world is the whole concept of how threatening is any change to my health or to my physiology or my physical life, things like that. We care about politics because we see it as the economy of how we will survive. And to a certain degree, that is all very true. And then we place a lot of other things in politics that shouldn't be there. But we do it anyway because we don't know how to live. No one taught you how to live. No one taught me how to live. And the living leads to the meaning of our existence as life itself, which is something that a lot of people just simply do not understand or can't conceive of. So we have to look at ourselves in a different way, and we have to look at our living in a different way. There is nothing sacred in our living. There is no sanctitude in our living. And our living is moment to moment to moment to moment. Brad, we miss it all because we're so busy trying to moment to moment to moment get what we want or avoid doing something we have to do in order to survive or in order to sustain something. Most people are really content in not working. It's not that some people don't want to work. I think a majority of people don't want to work. But some people just don't see the validity of what they're living. And they don't like their living. And they blame that living day to day on their parents, on the economy, on the government. They're always blaming someone. They just don't see that it, as Buddha said, we make our world with our thoughts. So the world you and I know, Brad, are based on the kind and quality of thoughts you and I both have. And instead of examining those qualities and those thoughts, we tend to negate them. We tend to ignore what's really going on with our thoughts. What is going on with my thought? How are things changing? Have my thoughts become so rigid, so gelled, so maybe galvanized that as I look at the world and I look at what is going on in the world, I have to ask, is my mind interpreting this correctly? Does it need interpretation? What is really happening here? How am I living? Now, when you get into that, when you really start to understand, there's an old beautiful Zen story from Chuang Tzu. He wakes up. He was a great Zen master, Brad. He was a beautiful man, evidently. I wish I had known him. And he comes to his students and he said, I had a dream last night. I dreamt I was a butterfly. But he said, it is confusing. Am I a butterfly dreaming that I'm Chuang Tzu, or is Chuang Tzu dreaming that he is a butterfly? The mind is an iffy thing. And when you start looking at it, I know you say, well, there you are standing there as a human being. How can you be a butterfly? It's a metaphor. In the dream, he's a butterfly. In his waking physical life, he's Chuang Tzu. Which one is he? Does he have to be one or the other? These are the things that make insight so powerful, so inner work so meaningful. What have you come to about yourself? The changes you see in the world that are happening, you say the world has changed. What does that mean? It means that you are looking at the world from a different point of view. Maybe the world isn't fitting what your mindset has, your mental acuity can think. Maybe you've gone as far mentally as you'll ever go, and the world, with all the people in it and all the drama and all the cruelty and all the malice that is motivated in this world by our fear and our hate, is starting to bother you, starting to show you how you think. And as we mature and you're in your 50s, you start to recede into your genetics even further and further because you're getting closer and closer to death. And then family and people and situations become far more important. The chemistry in your body is changing and you are changing. If you have identified with your body, and most people do, they identify with their meat suit, as I love to call it. So as long as you identify with that, you're going to find that your body cowers when there is any kind of change. Your mind will be there to protect it, and your emotions will be freaking out, wondering what's going to happen next, which will affect your thinking, and on and on and on this craziness goes. To nauseam, by the way, and we start to get nuttier and fruitcakes. There's a lot of mental illness in this world. I think, you know, young people, I work with some really interesting young people in session work, and they haven't a clue what's going on. And if you even remotely, you know, kind of move towards the idea of impermanence and change and everything, they think they will welcome it, but they have no idea that they're getting old. Have no idea. Have no idea what the meaning of their life, the gravitas of their life is, because they get off on the changes that are going on that keep them going and going and going and living and living and living as they do, and they never come to the meaning of their life. So, yes, the world appears to have changed. How? I don't know how you see that, other than the economy and politics and the ecology of it all. But really, it hasn't. It's still run by fear, hate. Fear and hate are the most powerful qualities of people's lives. And so we define our lives, our livingness, in the way in which we divulge our hate and fear and how important it is to us, which builds a prejudice, which builds a bias, which builds all sorts of ugly things happening in our life. And we suddenly realize that what we thought was true isn't. What we thought was right ain't. What we thought was good quite possibly could turn into bad. We're very confused and we don't have any inner stability, spiritual awakening to really see the broader picture of our life. This is why we work upon ourselves, that we might know something greater than our opinions, our gestures, our bias. And if you can get into that, well, you have something very different, and the changes all make your life, and you see how to make them make your life in a very loving way. You know, one last thing, Brad. In the end, if you really want to solve the puzzle that you think you're in, you have to realize you must be willing to die, and that we all do die. In our lifetime, we die. We don't die, but the body dies. And if you can understand that the body will shed itself from our beingness, and there we will be shining beautifully. If you can understand that, then you can die in this life, in your own living, and never shed your body until it is time for it to wear out and leave. And in that, you will have tremendous insight. A man must be born again, as Jesus said, not of the flesh, but of the spirit. Something for you to think about. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question comes from Amanda, and she says she lives in the Midwest. That's all she'll tell. I was going to come to your house, Amanda, and answer your question here. So since I don't know your address, I'm going to have to search the whole Midwest. What do you do, she asks, when you realize, or I realize, as she said, what I'm doing is so wrong. Amanda. Well, I don't know what you're referring to, but we've all been in the place where we thought we were absolutely correct about something we wanted to do or thought was happening. We absolutely knew we were correct. Absolute thinking is what I call it. And there are people who are absoluters. And when that happens, the pride sneaks in and it becomes the premise of defending ourselves even when we're obviously wrong. We don't like that. We just don't like that. Apologies and making apologies are very difficult for people to do. To say, I'm sorry, I judged you wrongly, or I judged you harshly. This is very, very difficult for people to do because the ego's involved, the emperor of all malice is involved, our human heart, and so it makes it very difficult for us to say, I'm sorry. So what do you do when you realize that what you've done is so wrong? Well, there are a lot of things. First thing, you have to see it for whence it did come. How did you get to this illustrious place where you thought you were right? Does it teach you not to be right or to be wrong? Every act teaches us something. And there's a lot of acts we wish we hadn't done, we hadn't said, or whatever. And we just don't have the humility to say to that person or to even admit to ourselves that we were wrong. But it is a legitimate step in the awakening of the spiritual heart to have that experience. And you have to ask yourself, is love more important to me than being right? Real love. Not Greg Penn love and not your love, but real love. Is that more important than being right? And as that builds and grows in a person like a cancer, where they have to be right in order to be legitimate or to be the kind of person that they think they are that makes them superior to other people, if that's what you need, that is what you'll get. And you will find yourself, you know, at some point in your life, some maybe examination in your life where you look over your living and you realize, I did a lot of things that just weren't kind. And I wasn't correct about my assumption or the basis of my actions. You're going to find a lot of that. And when you do, you will do one of two things. You'll either rationalize it and try to ignore it in that rationalization, or you will let it teach you how to be humble, how to be meek enough inside yourself to be teachable, to make a change in your life. And if you can do that, and most people can't, then you have developed, you have started the process of inner maturity. Maybe apologies are in order. That I think is always very important, is to apologize. But for the most part, we don't do any of that. We don't live in that kind of mechanism where we can humble ourselves. We are always looking at the mechanism where we live for the sake of our pride. So if you're wrong, if you're really wrong, Amanda, and you know that, make amends. Do things. You can go to people and apologize if you have the courage to do that kind of thing. Or you can, if you can't do that for whatever reasons, and there are reasons that you can't do that. People are skeptical of us when we say we're sorry. Then the next thing you have to do is maybe make inroads to restitution in your life. Simply don't judge anymore. Don't go off the handle anymore. help other people in a way in which you wouldn't normally help other people. Make restitution for the way you've lived your life. And if you do that, it'll make it easier for you to not jump to conclusions, because you will see the pain and suffering that is caused by jumping into biases and conclusions that really you and I have no right to do. So there you are. Amanda, be kind to yourself. Be forthright with yourself. Be honest, but don't be punishing. That's the big one. Look at everything from the insight, not the outside, as I like to call it. That's just Greg. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste. Last question. This comes from Royal. He does not tell me where he lives. I am not changing, and it's not good. How should I change, and where do I begin? Royal. Well, I don't know you, Royal. I love your name, though. I'll tell you where I would begin. I would do some self-examination. I would find myself an authentic teacher, spiritual teacher. I would tell him or her my story, and I would see where it went from there. You need solitude right now. You need simplicity and solitude before you can reach the silence, which is everything in a person's life, that depth of silence. You need to talk about what you've done, how you've done it, the pain of what you've done. You need to be aware of what changes you can make. You can't allow your persona or your ego to define those changes or make those changes viable. You can't depend upon your body. The whole circumstance was the bias and the quick decisions we make based on impulse, which are always based in survival modality, which is always used as fear and hate. And that's how we normally operate in this world. Everybody is on the brink of their own self-hatred all the time. On the brink, always on the edge. You can insult people. You can get crazy. You can get unkind. You can, there's all sorts of things you can do. And at any moment, you can explode. And you won't know why. Sometimes it's out of jealousy. Sometimes it's out of pride. Sometimes it's out of self-preservation. You don't know. You must find out where you live from within yourself, Royal. That's what you have to do. Where do you live from? And can you transcend that? Would you be willing to transcend that beyond the confines of other people's opinions of you and what they think of you? You can't be worried about other people and what they think of you. You must be focused on what it is that is you igniting your emotionality, let's say, like a rocket ship, and setting you off. And what is that in you? And I think you will find, if you meditate and you get a good teacher. I don't know where you live, but if you have a good teacher, they will show you where the origins of all of this is within yourself. And they're in places that are very, I hate to say it, dear to your human heart. And when you understand that they are dear to your human heart, then you'll understand the price you're going to have to pay to let them go. And that's a very, very personal decision, and also very difficult decision to make. Because when you make that, it will alienate you probably from the people who you have confederism with, friendships, and they are all the same as you. And you're going to find they're going to say, hey, you're changing. You're not as prejudice in this area of your life as you used to be. You're not the same guy you used to be, whatever. And all of that is going to cause issues. Change rattles everything. Thank you Royal, I would love to sit down with you sometime, so give me a call. Please forgive me. Namaste. I'm out of here. I gotta go. I'm getting late. Have a wonderful week, and I will see you tomorrow. Please forgive me. Namaste.